welcome to the Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast from Guymey Baptist Church, where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. Because we believe that one of the spaces where faith can grow is in those small conversations about the big topics. Well, hello, hello, hello. You're here for another Big Three with Matt Willis and Jess Baker. How you going, Jess, my friend?
Fabulous.
Look at us, 2 weeks in a row. Wee-hee. No more holidays. We're officially back.
We are
well and truly into this series that we've started as a church community, The Courageous Life. So, Jessica, tell me, when do you need to be courageous?
Do you want the serious answer or the funny one? Both equally requiring just as much courage.
Oh, well, I'll go the funny.
Okay. look, a couple of years back, and it did only last for a short while, I took up the banner of walking into F45.
Oh, the gym.
The foul pits of hell. No.
And there was your mistake.
Knowing I was going to vomit mid-session, as we all have. But every day I walked up those stairs and wobbled back down them, I just thought, like, that's courage, isn't it?
Is it or is it folly, like what Mark was speaking about last week? Because I just think exercise is not good for people.
I just don't think it is either.
It makes you feel terrible. Yeah. It is not. Injuries. Like pain, why? Yeah. Why do people do it to themselves?
I don't know. Mm. That's why it only lasted a very short time. I have not been back, nor will I ever again.
So in my sermon, which I preached this past Sunday.
Very well.
Thank you. I was waiting for that compliment. I spoke about how we embellish on resumes and stuff.
Yep.
So one of the times that I needed courage was the result of embellishing. Mm-hmm. So I got a job in an outdoor rec conference.
Oh, amazing. I love where this is going.
and they were like, oh, you're like competent in rock climbing. Mm. I was like, yeah, of course. Like, please give me the job. And naturally I was petrified of heights. So day one, they're like, oh, we're going to have you supporting on rock climbing. And it wasn't like a man-made rock climbing wall. It was like down a proper cliff. Mm. And the person,
I don't know if you can say like a camp for teenagers, it's down a proper cliff.
It was a proper cliff.
All right.
Anyway, you weren't there. You don't know.
A small hill.
But I was part of the demonstration and I got halfway down this rock face, like absolutely terrified. And she's like, and now Matt's going to demonstrate what happens if you like go upside down. And I was like, oh my gosh. But of course, like there are all these teenagers there. So you're like, am I going to be courageous? And like there were two points of fear ultimately. Fear of my life that I might fall down this cliff, but also fear of the mocking of teenagers,
ruthless.
That is a sting. So naturally I went upside down. Face that fear. Yeah.
Well done. I'm proud of you.
Well, thanks.
But if you hadn't lied initially, maybe you wouldn't have been in that
situation. They might have put me on archery instead. It's not necessarily more safe, but at least it's firmly on the ground.
Yeah. Look, and that's a lesson.
It is. Well, just as I said, we continued our series this past Sunday. I actually preached on the person of Abraham, did not do a first person narrative.
I was disappointed.
Well, listen, we've just got to leave it to the big guns, Mark Rader. Like he's the one who really brings it out for the first person narrative. Mm-hmm. But we did kind of explore that Abraham isn't naturally a courageous person, that
absolutely
he is someone
a man after my own heart.
he's the everyman.
He's like the Old Testament disciple. Where you're like,
just constantly fumbling his way. Yes, he is. He's the
making
OG.
Us feel better.
But that it's through the faithfulness of God that we're actually given the space to be courageous. Mm. And obviously for anyone who wants to listen to that sermon again or for the first time, you can head to Spotify or Apple iTunes and get that sermon on the GBC Sermons podcast. But as is part of what the Big Three is, we never want the lessons from Sunday to stop there. We want to kind of keep unpacking them and keep discussing them and really figure out what this looks like for our life. So we're going to get Mark Rader in a moment. We're going to throw some questions at him. So just walk us through what are our Big Three for today.
I don't like what I'm going to learn from question one, but here What do you think we can learn about the length of time over which God's promises to Abraham unfolded?
Because it's a hot minute.
It is a hot minute.
I think something like 25 years from the promise to Isaac being born.
Mm-hmm. And a whole lot of fumbling in the middle.
Oh, bless him.
Bless his soul. Question two, if courage doesn't come from us, does what we do matter? I'd like to just sit back and relax. Thank you. If
and
that
let,
could be
and
your
let
answer,
God's
Mark.
Faithfulness just put everything in place.
And question three, where can we be intentional in our seeing the faithfulness of God within our everyday life?
Nice.
No, yeah. Great
Beautiful.
Wrap-up question.
Yeah, give us the answer, please, Raina. Just let us know what we need to do. All right. Well, let's get the man in. Mark Raina, welcome to the Big Three.
Thanks, Matt.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Hey, Jess.
Hello.
So we're talking about courage. Mark, what does courage mean for you?
I think courage is the ability to act when everything within you says don't. Yeah, so it's that whole presence of fear. Like what is it? You can only be courageous when you are afraid. Like if you're not afraid, you're not actually being courageous. You're just doing something that is well within your capacity. So it's that moment of saying, okay, there's a risk here. I'm a little bit freaked out and acting anyways.
So like, this is not a part of the Big Three. This is not one of our Big Three questions, right, but okay. Like, when is fear just good old common sense? Like, when is fear not a bad thing? Like, when is it just like, this is my survival instinct kicking in and keeping me alive?
Yeah, so I think teenage boys should just always
listen
to fear and go, hey, survival instinct. I think that's part of the whole question of wisdom, right? Mm. When is a risk, as we spoke about last week, when's it foolish? Like, when's it just dumb? And when is it actually a really worthwhile risk? And, it seems to me that, you read the biographies or the stories of, great men and women, and there seems to be one or two of those knife edge moments where it could have gone either way. And if it had gone the other way, you would not be reading the book because their life would not have been great. Yep. So there is something about being willing to take those sorts of risks and, I don't know exactly when when the survival instinct kicks in.
I guess it's a case-by-case scenario.
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, beautiful. Well, that was not part of the Big Three. Let's get into the Big Three and start asking our questions.
So question one, we'll start off with Abraham, how long he had to wait for God's promises. And God was quite obvious about his promises and quite clear, but he still had to wait for them nonetheless. So what do you think we can learn about the length of time over which God's promises to Abraham unfolded?
Oh, probably learned quite a bit, actually. I think, again, there's a few elements to the story of Abraham that I think are worth pulling out. I think, what Matt, you pulled out on Sunday, I think is a really critical piece of the story.
Which part was that? Just for anyone listening at home who hasn't heard the message.
That's right.
Asking for a friend.
That's right. It's the idea that the blessing of God was actually evident in Abraham's life long before, shall we say, the most obvious and the most desired part of God's promise came to pass, right? So the story is, of course, driven by the quest for a son, right? That the Lord promised that you'd have lots of descendants, has to start with one. He and his wife are kind of beyond kind of childbearing years, which is a bit of a problem.
Awkward.
It's awkward. The whole Hagar and Ishmael piece was an attempt to kind of deal with it. So the whole story is really driven by this, the desire for a son. But in the midst of that, the promise of God to bless him just rolls on like that. The whole scenario with Pharaoh, I think, is like, it's bizarre.
It's actually a little bit painful to watch.
It is. Well,
like, this guy's a bonehead and yet he got rewarded for it. I never get rewarded for my stupidity.
The moral
and
of the
I
story.
I feel gypped.
The moral of the story seems to be lie and get ahead in life, because
I'll take that moral.
Yeah, that's right. but what's working is not that Abraham was this paragon of virtue and therefore was rewarded for his behavior. What we find is because Pharaoh inadvertently cursed Abraham by taking his wife, even though he didn't know the Lord was faithful to his promise to curse those who cursed Abraham.
Yeah, so poor Pharaoh.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Pharaoh.
Also, the real winner of the story is how attractive the wife was.
I know.
What a babe.
You know, so there would have been evidence for Abraham to look back on. And I think this is part of what we can learn about Abraham, is that even though the thing that he wanted the most, which was a child, and probably the thing that he wanted second, which was like a permanent place to live, because he was just a nomad wherever he went, which is part of the reason why he ends up not only kind of capitulating to Pharaoh, but he does the same thing later on with some locals in Canaan. But he was impermanent. He didn't have a place. He didn't have anything. By the end of his life, he owned one plot of land, and it was the burial plot that he'd bought for his wife. Like that was it. But he wanted those two things so badly, but the promise of God to bless him and to protect him, shall we say, was evident. And so there was an element for Abraham, and I think we can learn from this, that he could at least look back and see God's faithfulness even while he was still waiting for an element of the promise to take place. Like I think if everything had been delayed, there was no blessing. Like there was no
it was
protection.
25 years of nothing.
And of just scraping by and not, you know, and being picked on and abused and oppressed by the pharaohs and the nobles of the world or whatever the case might be. Then it would have been a lot more difficult, I think, for Abraham to muster any kind of faith in God's promises. But at the very least, he had this sense that, you know, regardless of what I do, regardless of what happens, the Lord has been faithful in this sense. And so there's enough evidence to kind of build on. I mean, I think the other lesson out of it is, you know, that, we sometimes have to wait a lot longer than we would like.
Right? Oofed.
Yeah,
I was really hoping that wasn't going to be where we landed.
Yeah, you know, and you look at the life that Abraham led, and you know, like obviously we don't hear everything that took place in those 25 years, but you know, like there were some significant moments where he really just had to trust God, and even when you know he kind of doesn't complain to the Lord, but you know the Lord says, "Hey, you know, I'm with you," and he's like, "Yeah, I don't have any kids yet," and God's like takes him out and sees the stars, and he believes, and God credits to him his righteousness. And so there's this sense of being willing to, I think that's where the courage lies, right? The willingness to kind of say, okay, if we were going to have kids, it probably should have happened earlier than now.
Yeah.
Right. But God's promised. And so I'm going to choose to believe. Like there's courage in that, even though there was no real risk for Abraham, in the sense of like his life wasn't in jeopardy.
Yeah.
But his legacy was, I mean, if the Lord didn't come through on it, he was going to die without children. And as he himself says, then all of his estate would have gone to his servant and his family line would be done. So that was the risk, the longer term risk that he was taking, that if this doesn't come, if God doesn't come good on this, then my line is done. So there was an element of courage to wait and to hold the line on that, apart from the Hagar incident, which looks probably weirder to us than it was to them, but still was a demonstration of kind of trying to troubleshoot, you know, troubleshoot the problem and kind of go, okay, hey, look, we found a solution here. So I think those are probably the two big lessons. You know, I think on the one hand, being able to look and see where God has been faithful, even while we're waiting.
Yeah.
And then I think the second is to continue to be courageous as we wait, and to count the cost of that, because I think that's part of what Abraham did, right?
Yeah.
To say, okay, well, I'm going to stick with the Lord. You know, so when he sent Ishmael away, like that was a massive thing, you know, to kind of go, okay, I'm going to send him away. I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to, you know, because the Lord's blessed me, so I'll give him plenty, but he's not the son of the promise. That's a gutsy move. And, you know, making those sorts of courageous decisions along the way is, I think, important.
I think what that really says to me is that whole idea of that sometimes we can be blinded by the things that we prioritize as being important, where we think God is going to kind of interject and do do something, show up, do some work. And I think, you know, to your point, and I think you're right, like we see it in Abraham's story. Sometimes we need to kind of open up our peripheral vision a little bit and kind of go, well, actually, like, yeah, so this key thing that I'm kind of praying on, waiting on, believing that God's going to act upon, it hasn't come to fruition yet. But that, like, that's not to say that God's not at work. Mm. And we just need to make sure that we don't get that tunnel vision, because Abraham could have and did at times, and that kind of led him to forget or I guess not really credit the faithfulness of God.
Yeah. Well, I think, and you know, on top of that, there's also that sense that, you know, for Abraham, so he was accumulating all this wealth, like, great, I've got no one to leave it to. Right. So like they did kind of feed into each other a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's all well and good that everyone leaves me alone because you're with me. It's well and good that I'm, you know, really wealthy and, you know, that everything comes up roses for me. Like, that's great.
Mm.
But I don't have anyone to leave this to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't have any land to like call my own.
Mm.
Like, so to some degree, the blessing of God made the slowness of the other fulfillments even more difficult, you know, but they also provided the evidence that, yeah, God can be trusted in this space. So
nice. Well, let's get on to question two then. So Mark, part of, I guess, what I took from the story of Abraham was that courage was not something that he found innately within himself. It wasn't something that naturally came to him, but was the direct result of God kind of continuously being faithful to a promise, even when Abraham fumbled and failed. And you've kind of touched on that already. Like, it was in that moment of God kind of reaffirming his promise that Abraham was able to believe, and that's where the courage lies. But if courage doesn't come from us, if we're not the, I guess, the starting point or the launching pad for the courage that is required, does what we do matter?
I mean, I think if courage does not come from us, then I suppose you could argue that what we do doesn't matter. But
you could.
You could. But I actually
will
think,
you?
No. I think that the, I mean, at the risk of reframing the question so I can answer a different question. I mean, I think that the reality of God's promises and his faithfulness to them doesn't mean that we don't have to muster up any courage. It just means that we don't have to muster up nearly as much courage.
Mm.
Right. I think that's probably the big piece for me in that space. Mm. Because it's God's purposes and God's plans, and we accomplish them in his power, like, not as much rests on me, right? So I get to join in rather than being the driving force. Like, I don't have to be the one who sees this thing through and makes it happen. And so it just takes the pressure off.
Yeah.
And so I can be courageous without the same level of risk, because it's, like, to some degree, it's God's reputation that's on the line. It's God's plans and purposes on the line. It's God's power that's going to be questioned, not mine.
Yeah,
you know. Yep. And so I think it's not so much that we don't need to generate or act courageously, but that there's just not as much pressure on us.
Mm.
You know, it's like being able to fail in a safe space, right? You know, it's the difference between the game and practice. And one would not suggest that it's not a perfect analogy, because, you know, what we're doing with, you know, participating with God is the game. Like, it's real. But there's something about, you know, trying something in practice that you wouldn't necessarily practice in a game setting, because in a game setting, if it goes bad, you might
lose,
give up a goal or, you know, whatever the case might be. So you can, there's more freedom in practice because the stakes aren't as high. And I think that's kind of part of what we have when we participate with what God's doing. And that's really quite valuable.
Yeah.
In the sense that what we do matters, but the stakes just aren't quite as significant. So I think for me, that's where that's, where that question kind of falls for me.
Yeah, you know? I think it's that whole, it's got to be one or the other. Like either I'm contributing what's required or God's doing it all. But I think you're right. It provides this beautiful middle ground of I can, anything that I provide, God will use the value of it. But if what I provide kind of falls short or I fumble through it, it doesn't take away from what God is doing. It kind of reminds me of, obviously, we've been talking a lot about Nehemiah this year and that series and that whole idea of, you know, when Nehemiah got that opportunity to ask the king and make the request to go and rebuild the wall in Jerusalem. You know, he hadn't sat on his hands. It very much reflected, you know, prior thought and prior planning. He had been proactive in kind of thinking, well, these are the plans and purposes of God. And then just kind of when the opportunity presented itself was ready to go in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if the king had have turned around and gone, nah, no deal, well, like God still would have seen it come to fruition. But Nehemiah was ready. He'd prepared. He'd kind of participated already in that. And it seems like that's where we're kind of finding it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other part of it, we find courage when we do something with other people, right? Like, so often our courage is shared courage, right? You know, we have friends or we have advisors or mentors or coaches or whatever, people who kind of stand with us in the decision or support us through it or someone that we're doing it with. And that just makes it easier. And to some degree, I mean, we're doing something with God and that ought to inspire some courage in us as well. Like to know that the plans and purposes of God will come to fruition, which is, of course, a statement of faith, which is, I think, where this gets a little muddied for us, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're taking a stand of courage based on our faith that God will actually do what he says he's going to do. And there's evidence to suggest, right? This is why it's faith. There's evidence to suggest that it's not going to work out how we want. That's, you know, like if it were absolutely, utterly guaranteed, again, there's no need for courage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there is a real sense where what we believe, and what we say by faith needs to be enacted. That's where faith gets seen, right?
Yeah.
Faith is the evidence of things unseen. How do I know that you believe that God's going to make the world a better place? Well, because of the way you act, you're making courageous decisions to love like Jesus loved and to set aside your own rights for the rights of someone else. And the decisions that look a little bit dumb because you're not looking out for number one, and yet, you know, they kind of fall in place with what God's doing. So I think that, you know, faith and courage mix together for us when we're talking about these sorts of things. But again, I think our actions do matter, but they're ultimately not necessarily decisive, if that makes sense. Again, I think about team sports. You know, if you had the best player in the world on your team, chances are you still wouldn't win if they were the only person on the field or on the ice or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, you need other people, even if they're just schmucks, right? you just need somebody on the field who can do something to kind of make a bit of a difference, that the best players can do their thing.
Yeah. Well, I like that. That's the first like sporting analogy that I'm like, I get that.
Because you're one of the schmucks.
It's because I'm one of the schmucks. Absolutely. Like, I can empathize.
I can hold a stick.
Dangerous though. Dangerous.
You know, so, and it's more than making up the numbers. You're part of the team. But you know, ultimately the game's probably going to be won or lost on the strength of your all-stars, your superstars, rather than on you. So, you know, so we contribute. It's a real thing that we do, but the pressure's off us in lots of ways.
And that shouldn't devalue what we do, but actually give us the freedom to, I guess, be courageous.
And it's that whole thing about, you know, I don't know, it's being part of the team, right? Like, I'm just part of the team. Now I know my role in the team. It's not to be the guy. It's to hold the stick and, you know, trying to get in the way too much, really, you know, or whatever the case might be. You know,
you don't know. I could be an all-star hockey player.
It's true. I'm speaking of myself. You know, so it's, you know, you're just kind of doing your piece, right? And I think when we realize our role in the team, right, God's team is to, you know, basically be doing what God directs us to do and doing the things that we believe align with his purposes and plans. And that's when we're doing our bit. Ultimately, God's going to make it work. He's going to, he's the one whose plans and purposes are going to, you know, be, are going to land. So,
yeah. Nice. All right. Well, let's get on to question three.
So God was incredibly faithful to Abraham, even if at times he didn't necessarily earn it or deserve it. And same goes for us. But where can we be intentional in seeing the faithfulness of God within our everyday life?
Yeah. The faithfulness of God, you know, sometimes, you know, we talked a bit about it with Abraham. I think I can imagine that for Abraham, the faithfulness of God may have lurked a little bit in his peripheral vision. You know, you mentioned that before, you know, because we can end up getting so focused on the child, right? The thing that we want most, that we kind of miss some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think it's always worth having as broad a view of God's faithfulness as we can. You know, rather than, I mean, we want to be specific, right? To say that, you know, oh, God's faithful and not have a specific example. Oh, that's not helpful, right? You need that specific example. But I think we want to, instead of saying, you know, God was faithful in what I wanted him to be faithful in, like it's that broader view of being able to say, look, and I can connect a whole bunch of the dots here about where I've seen the faithfulness of God to his promises generally in Christ, in the provision that I find in my life, whatever the case might be. And that, I mean, that intentionality, I think that that intentionality begins with gratitude. It's probably what I would say, that we can, you know, again, I can imagine that there would have been times when Abraham would have been not very thankful for the 25-year wait. You know, like that, that wouldn't have been the attitude of his heart, right? He wouldn't have been like, well, I'm really super thankful that I'm 20 years older than I was and I moved countries and I'm living like a nomad and I still have no children. Like, I'm not sure that that would have been his immediate reaction. But to begin to ask ourselves, so what can I be thankful for? I think really gets our eyes off of the gap in God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you'd said to Abraham on some of those dark days, has God been faithful? I think he, you know, he probably would have gone, well, sort of,
I guess. You
know, right? Because if he was just focused on that one thing, but if you start saying, so what are you thankful for? It kind of automatically, it almost precludes the thing that we're waiting for. Right? Because we're not thankful for that yet. It hasn't happened. So I can't think about that. And so we start broadening our horizons a little bit. And I think when we practice gratitude, you know, what am I thankful for? It does two things. It gets us, stops us fixating on the gap or the lack that that we often want to focus on. And it also just does remind us of the faithfulness of God, like of the good things in our lives, of the areas where we can point to his goodness or his sovereignty or his kindness or his love or his grace or whatever the case might be, which then I think encourages us to hold firm on the promise in the gap, right? And asking those questions of, you know, for what am I thankful? What can I show and demonstrate gratitude? I think is a really good discipline.
Yeah.
To get our minds off of what we're missing and onto the things that, that God has done. So I think that that's a pretty important way to be intentional about that. You know, and you know, I think that's where the simple things can be quite valuable, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
To remember to give thanks for the day and give thanks for food and, you know, those sorts of things, which we can often do quite mechanically. I know that I can, But there's something about that intentionality of kind of going, actually, there's more to that than just a mechanical box ticking. There's actually something to be thankful for here. There's an acknowledgement of my finiteness,
God's provision.
There's a whole bunch of stuff in that. Mm. So I think those are pretty important ways to be intentional. Mm.
I think one of the things that, when I first read this question, one of the things that I was reminded of were those five contexts of discipleship that we talked about last year. You know, there's you and God, you and a few, you and a crew, you and...
I think we settled on zoo.
But oh, was it? Really, oh, gosh. Which was... Anyway.
Is that the church, the zoo?
No, there's one more. I think that's why we ran out of...
Anyway, but it was the whole idea of you and God, you and those key people, you and a group of people that you do life with, you and those who you serve with, and then you and the church. And I think what each of those contexts provide is a different perspective and a different lens to view what God is doing. So, you know, when you're you and God, it's that moment of kind of maybe having that gratitude and kind of going, okay, God, like what am I thankful for that you have done in my life? When you're with you and your crew, you know, those few people who really know you, then you can actually welcome them into the conversation and kind of go, well, as people who understand my story, where do you see God at work in my life? You know, in a life group setting, you're able to hear other people's stories of God's faithfulness. When you serve alongside each other, you actually get to witness firsthand together through ministry where God is at work in people's lives. And then obviously in church, we celebrate the fact that we follow a God who is at work in our lives. And I just kind of, I was like, oh, that actually provides multiple entry points into the faithfulness of God and how we perceive the faithfulness of God within our world and our experiences, because, you know, sometimes for someone to kind of sit there by themselves, that's just, you know, pick the day and I'm probably coming up blank. Like I'm just gosh, I've got too many other things on my mind. But having, you know, those key people who can kind of come in and be like, well, actually, like, let's just take a minute and take a beat and we could list these things off to give you that insight is sometimes really powerful.
Yeah, no, I think that that's accurate as well. I think that other people help us be courageous. Other people help us see the faithfulness of God. I think that's certainly true, particularly hearing other people's stories because, you know, it can often highlight, oh, so that's where God's been faithful for you. And actually, when I think about it, you know, if I look in the same place in my life, I actually see the same faith.
Yeah.
So interesting. I think there's enormous value in sharing the load a little bit in terms of how you find the courage to wait and the courage to, to persevere until the fulfillment.
It seems to be something that we've kind of moved away from, that kind of organic and almost normalized conversation of just God at work in our lives. Mm-hmm. I remember when my wife and I were living on the Northern Beaches and we met this couple, this lovely couple who became very good friends of ours, and they just did it. So beautifully and so like sincerely as well. It wasn't that, I think part of our maybe resistance to kind of having those conversations is because it can feel a little bit cringy. It can feel a little bit forced, like, you know, God is good all the time kind of thing. But they just kind of demonstrated in this real genuine manner just how God was at work in their day. It was just a natural part of the way that they talked about their day and what they were doing and what they were experiencing and the victories that they had and the challenges that they had. And I wonder if we need to, like, maybe our first step of courage, and maybe this is a courage that comes from us, is to, like, not be so proud about, you know, what those conversations might feel like or look like or be perceived, but actually just start having them and just bringing them into our natural conversations with, you know, with those who we're in a community of faith with, because then it gives permission for those shared stories. Then people are like, oh, well, you talk about it, I can talk about it. And all of a sudden we become a community who's far more willing to have those conversations instead of like, oh, well, that just feels uncomfortable, or I just feel like people are going to think I'm putting it on, or whatever insecurity it is that it gets triggered for.
I think it's also worth noting that sometimes whenever you do something new, it takes a while for it to feel normal.
Yeah.
To, right?
Yeah.
You know, like the first few times that you try to express, this is where I think I see God at work. It probably will sound a little bit awkward, at least to you. It'll just feel a little bit like that doesn't sound like me at all.
Yeah.
Because you'll be imitating what someone else has said. So like, I think this is how you share this. So I'll say it like this. And it's like, no, that's not me at all.
Yeah.
And that, I think we have to be a little bit comfortable with that awkward, you know, and give each other some grace as well. Like to not kind of go, oh, geez, Matt, so crazy.
That was awkward.
You know, but to kind of go, yeah, okay, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Good try.
Yeah,
good try. A for effort.
Yeah, you know, so how we do that, I think, is tricky. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really helpful starting point, though. Like the gratitude, the how do we bring this into our natural conversations? Where are the different areas in which we can see the faithfulness of God? Like if we're talking about intentionally seeing the faithfulness of God, I think they're a really helpful starting point for people. And they're not overwhelming either.
Yeah.
Like, you know, bringing it into a conversation is probably the most anxiety inducing of all of them.
Yes.
That's just because we all fear rejection and judgment.
Which is probably another podcast.
That's it. Yeah, that's a fourth question for sure. Well, thanks so much, Mark. We appreciate it. As always, your insights.
Pleasure.
And we'll catch you next time.
All right. See you then.
See you then. Jessica Baker, we went on a journey.
We did.
We've discussed the faithfulness of God and how we need to be courageous. What is your take home?
I think this story makes me a little bit nervous even hearing about Abraham. Like it was so evident to him, like so clear the promises of God literally like spoken out to him. And yet he still sucked.
I know what you're going to say. So like what chance do we have?
Yeah. So I think it was really valuable what Mark was saying in question three about like broadening your view of things, of not getting fixated on the thing you've asked for and the thing you desperately want, because that's only like while you're waiting an example of God's like that he's not faithful at this time or however you perceive that, kind of broadening it and going, well, actually, no, he's been faithful in these other areas. So why is this area any different?
Yeah.
And while you're kind of in that waiting game, maybe what you want changes or morphs or God kind of shows you something else or whatever it is. But yeah, Abraham.
Bless him. But I think that that practice of gratitude is super, like when Mark was talking about that, I think that was a bit of a penny drop moment for me. I was like, oh yeah, like, it forces you to shift your focus away from the thing that you're waiting on and actually consider the things that you've actually already experienced and probably are living within.
Yeah. Because we're so wildly blessed.
Yeah.
We just don't.
But we still want more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think, is it Veruca Salt in Willy Wonka?
Yeah.
He wants the world.
Yeah.
He wants the whole world.
I
was it. I almost did.
Please do.
But you always judge me when I bust out into song.
Love it.
So, No, maybe next week. Well, yeah, so we just need a little bit more gratitude. And maybe if Veruca had some gratitude, she wouldn't have gone down the egg chute in Willy Wonka.
She got eaten by the squirrels. That was her. Was it? Not eaten. But
I think you're talking talking the Johnny Depp version.
There were no squirrels in the original?
No.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
I've only watched Johnny Depp version once, but obviously that traumatizing scene where, of squirrels.
This is where our age gap really comes through.
Sorry about that.
Next, you're going to say that Lindsay Lohan was in the original Parent Trap.
I mean, she was in the better Parent Trap.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I think we need the big three to end before this
Jesus,
friendship.
Take the wheel.
But thank you again, Jess. As always, we love having you on.
Pleasure.
Even when you slander excellent film. We'll catch you next week. If you want to be a part of the conversation, head to slido.com, a live forum where you can submit your own questions or upvote someone else's. Then listen out in new episodes for the answer. Check our show notes for the Slido code. Today's episode was in response to the sermon preached at Gymie Baptist Church during our Sunday services this past weekend. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. You can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, where we hear the stories of faith from those within our GBC community. You can find both of those podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.